Welcome to Cybersecurity Where You Are, the Center for Internet Security's podcast. I'm Sean Atkinson, CISO at CIS.
And I'm Tony Sager, Senior Vice President and Chief Evangelist at CIS. Cybersecurity affects us all, whether we're online at home, managing a company, supporting clients, or running a state or local government.
So join us on Wednesdays as we discuss trends and threats, explore security best practices, and interview experts in the industry.
Together, we'll clarify these issues, creating confidence in the connected world.
Hello, and welcome to Cybersecurity Where You Are. I'm Sean Atkinson, CISO here at the Center for Internet Security. Today, we're talking about the FIFA World Cup. Not just the excitement of the tournament itself, but the cybersecurity planning and coordination that helps support an event of this size. CIS has been working with FIFA and host city since early last year to prepare for the tournament. And today I'm joined by two very special guests who can help us take a closer look at that effort. Many of our listeners will be very familiar with Mr. John Cohen. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fantastic. Great to be with you and my good friend, Sasha Larkin.
And we're excited to welcome Sasha Larkin from FIFA for her first time on the show. Sasha, would you mind introducing yourself to our audience?
I would be honored. Thank you so much for having me today. I'm Sasha Larkin. I'm the Director of Intelligence and C4 Operations for the FIFA World Cup 2026. I've been here just over 2 years. I retired from the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department. After just shy of 26 years of service, I retired as the Assistant Sheriff over Homeland Security, all investigative services, the Fusion Center, basically everything other than patrol and the jail. However, I did spend the majority of my time in the Fusion Center or in patrol. Those are my two greatest loves, and had the opportunity to really spend a lot of time working closely with John on the federal landscape and doing a lot of fun things as it came to Homeland Security and counterterrorism missions, which somehow wrapped us around full circle to where we are here today. So thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. So John, welcome back to the show. A guest and very familiar with you and your presence on the show. And some of the things we've been doing in this space, but I want to set the scene. And Sasha, again, it's an honor to have you on the show. But what we have here with respect to the FIFA World Cup 2026, the largest event pretty much ever in the history of mankind. But let's I don't want to overemphasize it too much, but this has to be one of the most complex, both public safety, environmental elements ever assembled for really a sporting event. The beautiful game, as we call it now. So the tournament, we've got three nations. We've got 16 host cities, 48 teams from around the world, 104 matches over 39 days. Now, we've got probably billions now in terms of spectators, both traveling to the events, watching those events, understanding these events are happening. And this is happening, again, throughout North America. So now we've got thousands of public safety, security professionals working collaboratively and trying to provide both a secure, safe environment, both in terms of online, the entertainment, at the actual events themselves, working with around 3,500 different participants in terms of sharing information to create that environment, right? We've got emerging threats now in this space. We've got op centers assessing these risks 24/7. And really, one of the things I think we want to discuss in this area is the trust relationships that have been built up over time in to allow such a massive event to be coordinated in this space. And we see advanced threats coming from both the large-scale event itself, AI, drone technology, all different elements that could be a constituent in terms of that information sharing and understanding the threat environment. And when everything is done, again, the event's still occurring, I think there's going to be a lot of lessons learned. But the way I phrase it, Sasha, is this way. I think this is going to be the archetype for any large event ever again is going to follow the tenets that you, your team, have established in this space. So with that, what I'd like to do is jump into some thoughts in this area as well. So a few questions as we start. So again, the largest World Cup, the best World Cup so far, I would say the games have been absolutely phenomenal. The largest sporting events ever held, as I mentioned. So How does scale change the security calculus in this space compared to like a single city event or like a single event on a single day, such as the Super Bowl? Any thoughts there, Sasha?
Sure. Wow, you just gave so many stats. I was very impressed because it's something that we really hang our hat on, because it is, and make no mistake about it, you said it with a slight bit of hesitation. Let me say it with pure conviction. It is the largest sporting event in the world ever. It's phenomenal. It's you can't even wrap your head around three Super Bowls a day for 39 days. I mean, when you think about the math and, like you said, the magnitude of that, it really is extraordinary. And I will tell you that everything you said was spot on as far as the relationships and the collaboration and all the threats that we're facing in those spaces. You nailed it. And this is what I'll tell you, that has you asked about the security challenges. You know, people ask us all the time, what keeps you awake at night? What is the biggest security challenge? And it's always hard to give one or two. Because the question is, are you asking about guards, gates, and guns security challenges? Are you asking about the lone wolf attacker? Are you asking about cyber? So let's start with guards, gates, and guns, right? What is the hardest thing to do? Well, number one, at FIFA, safety, security, and service is what guides our principles. And if we're going to give people, our fans, one cup experience, then we want them to go to a stadium in Monterrey, Mexico, in Vancouver, Canada, and in Philadelphia, and have the same experience. We want them to know that they have to bring in a clear bag, right? What is the policy when they walk in? Do they have a soft ticket check? Do they have an exterior perimeter? Will they have to then go through metal detectors, right? We want them to know it's going to be the same, because that acts as a mitigation, right? Are we going to have canines present? What are they sniffing? Where are they present at? All of these things, the hardest part of that is having that consistency throughout those cities. Right. And then think about staffing the security that we do at the level that we do for the amount of days. Right. It's very challenging to find security companies with consistency, with integrity, right, that will show up, be on time, and have the folks there that are engaged in the mission. It's one thing to put a body in a suit, but are they paying attention? Are they actually looking for something we used to call in police work just didn't look right? So all of those things really compile for us to be a whole lot of work. And I would tell you that if you ask me in one work, the hardest part is consistency. We want to make sure that we have that and that we have it to the standard that we know we need to prevent and deter any sort of crime or terrorism.
Absolutely. I mean, phenomenal. Again, it's better coming from you that just how the magnitude of what you've built, what you've continued to curate, and what you've protected in the space and continue to, it is just, I mean, it's something the world hasn't seen. And again, coming out of this, you know, those lessons learned, so important for us to understand the magnitude of trying to, one, orchestrate a capability, manage it in terms of the overall capacity elements here. As you said, you know, three Super Bowls a day, you know, across this tournament leading up to, you know, the final game in a couple of weeks here.
So, Sean, I have to say, I think you both have done a great job describing it, but you've understated the challenge to some degree. I mean, think about it. It's an event of magnitude that I haven't seen in the 42 years that I've been working in law enforcement and homeland security. Three countries, you know, local regions. It's not just one jurisdiction. It's not just one venue in those regions. It's the venue where the game is being played. It's the secondary locations, hotels, restaurants, bars, streets, transportation corridors where fans are going to be traveling. It's where the teams are staying. It's where the teams are crossing the border to come into the United States to play games and then going back across the border to go into Canada. I mean, these are logistical challenges that have to be dealt with day after day after day for 39 days. But these games are also taking place at a time where you and I have discussed in the past, Sean, you know, this is the most volatile threat environment I think we've seen in this country, again, in the four decades of my career. I mean, we're dealing with physical acts of violence. We're dealing with cyber attacks by state and non-state actors. We're dealing with the increasing use of advanced technology like artificial intelligence and drones to engage in disruptive activities, whether it's swatting, bomb threats, or, you know, mass drone swarms, or even using drones as attack platforms or cyber attack platforms. These are all the issues Sasha and her team and the law enforcement and security professionals that she and the team have pulled together have to deal with every single day. They have to be a step ahead of the adversary every single day, because at the end of the day, there's a lot of ways to disrupt the games. There's a lot of ways to ruin the experience for the fans that are not only in the venue, in the stadium, but also the players, the officials, the broadcasters, and the people watching. I have to say, FIFA did something really impressive when they started pulling all of this together. You know, I've watched how non-government host organizations have worked in other circumstances. What FIFA did this time, though, is they put together a team of people who not only had experience in law enforcement and intelligence operations, but also came from the communities that were going to be involved in the security operations. Now, I've known Sasha for years, mostly from her time as a senior official of the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department. She has not only experience in dealing with these types of high visibility issues from the perspective of a major law enforcement organization, but she has relationships with people all across the country. The other leaders that the other security team leaders that FIFA brought in have similar relationships, whether it's because they were with the FBI or with state and local law enforcement or worked in the intelligence. Those relationships that they brought to this process going back over a year were crucial to the security operations being organized and the information sharing operations being organized the way they are. And it was really smart the way FIFA did this.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. I think from, and Sasha, the way I would think about this as well, and again, this is, you know, for you to completely disagree or set me straight, as it were. So John mentions, we set the cyber physical elements, these dependencies that work with one another that have to be orchestrated in such a way that creates symmetry, that creates coordination, that creates an ability to execute such a massive scale plan for the FIFA World Cup. But when we think about now, what prepared you for this in terms of, as John mentioned, you know, in your career, has this given you one, either appreciation for those interdependencies between cyber physical elements and now with the higher risk elements between elements of IT, some of the operational technology of the events themselves, the logistical coordination, the stadium networks, transportation? Seems like, as John had mentioned and called out perfectly, they don't get enough attention in some cases. Have you seen that? And is that something you've addressed in your underlying planning and approach?
It's an interesting question, Sean, because it brings me back to something that I deeply believe, which is the rise and fall of any organization or major event is communication. And without that, we will fail. And I don't know that when people are putting together a large scale event or when they see one pulled off, they go to the World Cup, they don't really think about, and look, nor should they, right? We want them to go and have an experience. But behind the scenes, what's happening as I sit here right now in the Tournament Operations Center in our stadium, Operations Center operates out of the stadiums, and then we have our Safety Security Operations Center co-located here with our Tournament Operations Center. The amount of information that we move, and let's just take one, for example, just between the functional areas up here. So FIFA has 68 functional areas. And so if I get word that there's a protest, my team gets word that there's a protest on the corner of Walk and Don't Walk Street in New York City. Well, we have to ask ourselves, how many different functional areas does that affect? Well, it affects transport, team services, right? We go through the list and then we blast out that message on a channel that tells everybody that internally, hey, just, you know, there's a big protest. They've blocked traffic. They're blocking arms on a human chain, whatever it is. And then transport gets in and goes, oh, we're going to have to divert. We're going to have to do this, right? So that messaging just internally. Now, do our fans need to know that? How do we get that information to our fans? Okay, we'll blast that on this channel. Does law enforcement need to know that? Great, we'll push it out on TRX. Whatever it is, like, we have all of these communication platforms, and that's just one little protest. The amount of information that comes to us, now quadruple that. If, like, a couple weeks ago we were running 6 matches a day, that information was flowing at such a intense volume that we have people that all they do is log all the information coming in. And then somebody else takes it and pushes it, right? And logs where they pushed it. So, I mean, that you're talking just about information moving from point A to point B. We're not even talking about actioning the information, right? Once we action it, that's a totally different question. So really the way we set it up is our intelligence team then takes action on the information once it comes in. If it's a person doing something, even something simple like fake credentials, we take that information, we action a credential, we send it to the folks that can turn it off if they faked it. We then do a workup on the person. Who are they? Have they done this before? You know, are they a criminal? Are they just trying to get clicks on YouTube? What is it? And then we take it, put a packet together, and push it back out. So all of that is happening in real time on top of monitoring these protests, pushing that information to make sure that the boots on the ground, that the venues and everything understand, hey, there's a very violent protest coming your way, right? Make sure you take appropriate mitigations on the street. So all of these pieces come back to one simple thing, which is effective communication, knowing who to call for the answer. Because a lot of times they'll call from the street or from the venue and they'll have a question. And we're like, man, I don't know how to answer that question, but I know who does, right? And finding that person up here. So one thing that FIFA has done well is design a setup here for us where everybody is present, right? We have somebody around here around the clock. We know where to go for the answers. And we work very well as a team, even cross-function. So I think to John's point earlier, that building of relationships ahead of time was essential for us to have any sort of success at this point.
Yeah, and Sean, you know, I mean, thinking back over the last year, year and a half, I think it's been, Sasha, I mean, we started this process by, you know, assessing what are the various different types of threat activity, what's the various type of criminal activity that, you know, jurisdictions that are hosting games or secondary venues will have to be concerned about. It's about forming those relationships within each one of those host regions. It's about determining how you're going to share information and under what circumstances. It's about how you're going to monitor for emerging threat-related issues, whether it's a mass shooting that occurs as a result of some criminal activity unrelated to the games, but it's in close proximity, or whether it's a drone incursion intended to disrupt the game. You know, how are you tracking that? How are you picking up those threats? How are you sharing that with people? I mean, FIFA hosted meetings with, you know, the various jurisdictions working in the host regions, going back, you know, like I said, early last year, where they were going through these scenarios, they were thinking about these problems, they were talking about how they're going to share information. So I go into all that detail because it doesn't just happen overnight. It doesn't just happen organically. Even though, you know, you have a lot of people who have worked together in the past, working together on this issue, you still have to build those pathways of communication and operational interaction. And that's the other thing. You know, having someone like Sasha or GB, you know, who work at FIFA, who come from the operational environment, they truly understand that it's not just information that's important. It's information that guides operations. You know, how is this piece of information going to allow a hotel security personnel or a police officer or a deputy sheriff or, you know, an emergency manager to make the changes and do the things that they need to do to keep the public safe and to keep the operations running effectively. It's been a huge undertaking, huge. And it's happened because of good leadership by FIFA and by, you know, the state and local government officials who have been involved in this planning. But it's been effective, you know, knock on wood up to this point, because people really came, you know, across the country and in Canada and Mexico came together and said, we are going to work together to make these games successful.
Absolutely. We're going to take a quick break. We've got way more coming up. We're talking about CIS's five-step framework. We've got to talk about Sasha's experience in terms of understanding new generations of threats and how to protect those that no other event of this size has had to think about in the past. And John, some of the advice you've given in the past with respect to tabletop exercises and preparation, what goes into something like that for an event of this capacity and size? But with that, we'll be right back. Up until recently, threat activity fell into one of three domains: cyber, physical, or information operations.
This made it simpler for defenders to learn about a threat actor, track its evolution, and put protective measures in place.
Unfortunately,
It's no longer that simple. Threats are now multidimensional, blending these three domains together.
You can't analyze threats in silos any longer, and a pair of 3D glasses won't help you expose them. You need to see the entire threat environment. You need ThreatWAR.
Unlike separate raw data feeds, ThreatWAR provides warning and analysis of multidimensional threats all in one place. That means time and money back to make better risk decisions.
ThreatWAR isn't just a subscription. It's an exclusive intelligence sharing network that uses its expertise to help you defend against today's multidimensional threats.
Actionable intelligence in a complex world. ThreatWAR's got your back.
Learn more by visiting cisecurity.org/ThreatWAR.
Okay. So, Sasha, as John had finished off here, one of the things I think so important as we start to understand the next generation of threats in the space, whether that's AI-generated, manipulated content, things of that nature, how do you look at scenarios like this? And when really you're on the cutting edge, I think, of assessing events in terms of threat in this space, being able to respond to it at the capacity, size, and scale that you have to think about, how do you think about those types of operational scenarios? And also thinking about during a live match, the preparation of those matches, the preparation of the stadiums, the events themselves, the days leading up to those matches. It seems like this is a constant thread of just trying to understand threat and be able to counter it in some form or fashion. How did that fit into your overall assessment and operationalization processes?
We had to be very clear in the beginning what our lane is, meaning if we're going to partner with our federal partners, just for sake of argument, let's say the FBI, the White House Task Force, state and local fusion centers, law enforcement, our federal partners are very clear that they handle terrorism, right? They handle it on a unclassified, classified level. They do investigations into terrorism. Okay, great, terrorism. Our state and local fusion centers and law enforcement partners, they know crime in their area and they know it the best. They do it day in and day out. They put together policing plans. They understand the threat and the dynamic of crime. So where does that leave us, right? Why does FIFA need security and or an intelligence section? Well, very clearly, we are here to do football intelligence, because the truth is, when we started on this 2 years ago, we had to go on almost a bandwagon. My boss, GB Jones, and I went to more conferences than you can possibly imagine, beating the drum, playing videos of these very passionate fans. I'll give you a great example. We played the video of the Netherlands fans, 10, 15, 20,000 of them dressed in orange with their orange bus, dancing down the street together in unison. And we're like, hey, American law enforcement, this is coming to your city. And this is just, this is a well-behaved video of what's coming. And then we showed videos of Copa and the Argentinian and Colombian fans. And then we showed all sorts of things to say, they're coming, right? The question is, are you ready? And so trying to get people to understand this isn't your Sunday NFL game. This is a whole different level of passion and devotion. People sell their house to come to the World Cup. And that is not a slight on ticket prices. That is just to say that people have to get on an airplane, fly across the oceans, and come to our countries to experience this. So with that, we went, okay, we have a niche here to educate them. So my incredible intelligence team, made up of 6 analysts, a senior manager, and a head of phenomenal. One of them is in Mexico. She's stationed in Mexico City, obviously really focused on what's happening down there. One is here, but focuses on Canada. And then I have 4, thanks to John, I have a total of 4. That really focus on everything happening within these 11 US cities. And so their whole goal is to say, okay, 48 countries, right? You said it, 48 countries coming here. What are the geopolitical dynamics with each one of those countries? So right after we finished the Club World Cup and teams started to qualify, we took them and started to do team profiles, which means we did a deep dive into everything about them, culture, rivalries, fan dynamics, who they are, how many World Cups have they been in, how do they act, right? Everything you can imagine. And we put together almost like encyclopedias. And I don't know if your listeners are old enough to know what encyclopedia is, but if they don't, just tell them to pretend it's like ChatGPT in book form. And we wrote these team profiles and we said, okay, stakeholders, read these. understand who's coming. And then after the draw in December, when we started to know the original matchups of the matches, we then put together match risk assessments that looked at Iran playing Egypt on a Saturday in Seattle. How does that work? What are the dynamics? What are the aggregators and mitigators that go along to making that a baseline match, or is it slightly elevated? And we looked at all sorts of things such as stadium dynamics and then non-competition sites, because sometimes fans act different, as we saw in Mexico this weekend, at non-competition sites, right? They show up to the hotel, they yell and scream and bang on drums to try to keep the other team awake. Very different than maybe how they act in the stadium, right? The Japanese fans, after the match is over, pick up trash. Very different than ripping up the seats when their team loses, as some of our South American friends have experienced. So all of those things to say that we wanted our stakeholders to understand, hey, who's coming? And how do I deploy resources effectively over that 39-day period so I don't have officer burnout, so I can, you know, make sure people get a little bit of time off? How do we really do it in a manner that keeps everybody safe and secure, yet is realistic for all of the organizations that have a part in this? So I don't know if that answered what you were asking. That's just on a specific intelligence level, because it is different for the physical security side, which is also different from emergency preparedness. This is such a wide topic, so I just have to narrow my answer and give you the intelligence answer on this one.
If I can add a little bit, Sean, to what Sasha was saying, I mean, so over the course of a year, year and a half, as Sasha said, and we've been very fortunate to work closely with not only Sasha's team at FIFA, but also with the fusion centers, with the host regions, particularly those that are MSISAC members as well. And where we've tried to focus, look, you know how much I love my profession, and I say this with love and affection, but sometimes the people who work in the world that Sasha and I come from tend to look at the world through the lens of the past, as opposed, you know, what happened yesterday, and they're not looking what's happened in the future. I think one of the things that we've tried to do is really look ahead. As the games, you know, as planning for the games was evolving, to think about what could be the types of things that could happen that we hadn't anticipated. So there's a whole series of products that were developed, you know, strategic analysis, incident and situational awareness alerts. There's been a weekly threat update that FIFA puts out talking about events. And this has been going on, you know, in the lead up to the games and currently, the types of events that could give us insights to what you may have to deal with as the games progress. I mean, we looked at things ranging from, you know, illicit sports betting to the use of drones to fraudulent schemes to sell tickets, illicit fraudulent schemes selling tickets, to looking at how synthetic media could be used to disrupt the games. I mean, lone actor and small group tactics that could be used in and around the games as a physical threat methodology. I mean, these are the types of things that the FIFA intelligence team and we, you know, worked with them on to make sure that host regions were prepared. And I was laughing when you were talking, Sasha, because I remember some of my conversations with Chief saying, you know, I don't think you really understand what the fans of international football are like. I said, they're passionate, they're coming to your city. You know, are you prepared for a group of 1,000 people outside of the hotel where your team is staying, shooting off fireworks and yelling through megaphones because they want to keep the team that they're not rooting for awake all night long? These are the types of problems that they needed to be prepared for. And you know, like I said, I think because of a lot of hard work, because of, like you mentioned earlier, the use of tabletop exercises where these types of threat scenarios are presented and you actually have people sitting around a table saying, how are we going to deal with this? And walking through their communication protocols, their operational protocols, it's not to say, and I'll let Sasha talk about this, it's not to say like we haven't seen anything. I mean, things have happened in and around these games. They've just been handled really effectively.
Yeah, Sasha, any thoughts there?
You know, look, I think part of it is the teams that we have on the ground, most of them, not all of them, we had the opportunity to experience a little dry run last summer called the Club World Cup. And so we did get a taste of kind of what was coming. We did understand the magnitude to a point. We did understand that there was going to be a lot of moving pieces and that we had to really nail the reporting aspect of this, because we're only as good as the information that we get. And so at the end of the day, we really had to train our folks. When you're done here, and we make it pretty easy for them as far as having a report that they fill out and they just send in on a automated system. We get that in the very early morning. We produce another report off of it that we do our briefings off of. And I will tell you that having that communication with law enforcement, having someone that we can reach to at the Fusion Center and go, hey, what's happening with this? What's the closure on this arrest? I'll give you a great example. In our, I believe it was the opening week, we had that active shooter event just outside Kansas City where the guy drove down the freeway and shot people. There was a 2 or 3 day manhunt. He lit the house on fire. Like, that was a big deal because the media was starting to say, hey, is he targeting the World Cup? Was he targeting people that were attending? Right. So that's a huge deal for us. And being able to have that quick communication and understand that we could reach out to the Fusion Center, we could reach out to folks that we had developed relationships with. All of that was really important. The analyst that sits with us who works for John communicates directly with the Kansas City Fusion Center because she's embedded there often. So we really were very blessed to have real-time communication happening. And the same thing is true with all of these Fusion Centers. And we've been very, very lucky that the head of the National Fusion Center Association, Mike Senna, partners with John and I. And so we felt like we really had real-time connectivity for also synchronization of messaging. Like, we would call Mike and say, hey, let's get together, call all the Fusion Center directors. We want to push one consistent message, push out one consistent email, make sure they understood TRX. And I will tell you that was the secret sauce. We started early communicating to the chiefs and sheriffs to make sure they understood, here's what's coming, here's our process. And then we really worked the line level to permeate that messaging at the line level so they understood how to use the tools that we were going to give them and push that messaging through a cross collaborative platform. And to me, that bottom down, top down, bottom up approach was really effective.
Yeah, I don't know what the current count is, but I was in a briefing a couple of weeks ago. Sasha, you may remember that there was over 3,000 participants in this information sharing network. You know, and it includes, you know, Canada, Mexico, and the U.S. And it's not just the government folks, it's the private sector folks as well, because, like I said, you have hotel security operators, you have bars, restaurants, you have critical infrastructure owners and operators, transportation. I mean, the Milan Olympics, one of the ways that folks sought to disrupt those games was not attacking the venue, but disrupting the ability of people to take trains and mass transit to the venue. So that's all something that you need to factor that into your security planning and your threat communications. And that's what's occurring right now, every single day. And, you know, in speaking sort of from the CIS angle, it hasn't just been, you know, my small team that's been working with FIFA and others. You know, there was some suspicious cyber activity that was discovered, and our cyber threat team was able to take some of the information that was making its round through the information sharing capability and do some additional highly technical analysis of those malicious domains, and were able to develop some additional information that led to the discovery of a whole bunch of other malicious domains that could then be communicated back to the FIFA cyber folks and to others. So, it's really an all hands on deck type of, not to use a cliche, but it really is an all hands on deck effort. And we're a little over halfway through. So people are tired.
I can imagine. Well, that really brings us towards the end of our episode. I just want to say, Sasha, again, the work that you've done and continue to do through this event, absolutely phenomenal. I mean, we're looking at scale and complexity never seen before, information sharing tested in ways that we never expected, or really they were designed to even support in this space. And it's working, built the trust relationships, built the integration, built a capability to really create one of the great events that the world has ever seen. And that's not done, you know, just through a simple tabletop. It's done through preparation and the collaborations that you have, not only with us, but with many organizations throughout the world. So I just want to say thank you. Congratulations so far. We've got more tournament to go, but it was an absolute pleasure and an honor to get to talk to you today. And John, you as well, sir. Thank you so much for participating.
Thank you so much for putting this together. It's important that folks understand it's not just a haphazard event and that there's a lot of thought and coordination that goes into assuring that the people out there have all the information necessary to keep them safe, to make sure that this is the safest World Cup in history.
And, you know, something as Sasha said in the past, it starts with relationships, but it really requires a ongoing, disciplined, and comprehensive approach that just continues on through the duration. And again, I'll go back to something that was discussed earlier, which is there's a lot of people that are involved in this that have known each other for years, that have worked together for years, that have, you know, trusting relationships. And I think that, you know, when the white paper is written at the end, yes, it was organizations like CIS and FIFA and fusion centers and individual law enforcement organizations that individually brought their resources and capabilities to bear, but they did it in a holistic manner. And that is why we've seen the success that we've seen thus far.
Absolutely. Well, again, I want to thank you both. What an episode. What a, again, an absolute pleasure on my side to understand the complexities and everything that you've accomplished. Absolutely phenomenal. I can't wait for the lessons learned and really how this becomes the framework for any such events like this. And again, not the potentially the size or capacity of what's been built, but everything beneath, everything that is large scale is going to follow the tenets that you've built and what have created. Absolutely phenomenal. And I also want to thank our audience. Thank you for listening. Make sure to subscribe in all the usual ways with your preferred podcast provider. Make sure to join us on YouTube at The CI Security. Any questions, comments, concerns, reach out to us at podcast@cisecurity.org. And with that, we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to the podcast today.
The thoughts and opinions expressed by our podcast guests are solely theirs and do not necessarily reflect those of CIS.
Tune in on Wednesdays for a new episode. And in the meantime, visit our website at cisecurity.org.
Together, we'll continue our efforts of creating confidence in the connected world.